Hello and welcome to Car Talk from National Public Radio with us, Click and Clack, the Tappert Brothers. And we're broadcasting this week from the Customer Service Department here at Car Talk Plaza.
Mm-hmm. We get a lot of suggestions from our listeners every week. Most of them suggest that we go and perform something which is physiologically very difficult.
If not, never mind, we don't need to go there.
But once in a while, we get a request that seems entirely reasonable to us, and we're happy to comply. And I'll read you this note.
Okay, we'll see what we can do.
Dear Tom and Ray, I've been listening to your show for 15 years. I've learned a lot about cars and even went on a blind date through your show, but that's another letter. I'm married now, and my wife can always tell when I'm listening to Car Talk by my rather loud snoring. I listen to the show online in my home office. Usually I listen to it in the evening when I'm tired from a long day at work. It helps me relax. Well, maybe I relax too much. It doesn't matter if I'm lying on a beanbag on the floor or sitting at my desk. I always seem to fall asleep and saw logs. It's not unusual for me to have to play the show three or four times, starting from the last thing I can remember, to hear the whole thing. It's like you watching TV.
Yeah.
I'm sure that I'm not the only one who has this problem. He may be right.
It took me 16 months to see Gone with the Wind.
If possible, could you please play a loud sound effect of an alarm clock going off before each call?
Got it.
That way, I'll be able to spend less time playing the show over and over and have more time to watch reruns of Knight Rider. This guy's in trouble. Thanks, guys. Sincerely yours, Kevin DeAngelis, Wenatchee, Washington. Okay, Kevin, here you go.
Wake up, Kevin!
That's it.
So we'll be keeping you. Don't worry, Kev. You're all set, man. Anyway, if you've got a question about your car or anything else, give us a call. Or if you want a wake-up call.
It wakes me up, too.
She's an unintended side effect.
Yeah.
Wow.
Because one of us dozes off during every call. Let's face it.
Well, you're doing... anyway, the number is 888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hi, this is Michelle from Seattle.
Hi, Michelle from Seattle. What's going on?
Well, I have a Saturn SL2, and we have a dog. And our dog has been sort of running around the car and always trying to get into the front seat. So we bought her one of those doggy harness seatbelt attacher things.
Yeah.
And she did not like it at all. And halfway through a recent road trip, I heard this chewing noise, and I looked back, and she chewed a hole through the seatbelt from the car about a third of the way across the seatbelt.
Excellent.
not her harness, but, in fact, the real seatbelt.
Right, the more expensive thing.
The more expensive thing to replace.
Yes. Yeah. So, Mike, I called the dealership, and it seems a bit expensive to have replaced. And so my question is this something I could replace myself?
Well, you could. I mean, it's a nuts and bolts kind of thing, you know, but it's a kind of thing that has dire consequences if done wrong.
Right.
Of course, you never sit in the back seat, do you?
Right.
You're all set,
then. You care. Wait, what kind of a dog is this?
Well, she is a Lab Corgi mix. We like to call her a Laborgi.
A Laborgi.
And how big is she?
She's about 30 pounds. She's sort of a short, long dog.
Oh, she's
a
little.
A short, long dog. How did that... Never mind. You often wonder about how certain things happen.
Right, and she's actually from Wenatchee, Washington, where your previous caller was from.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Kevin. No kidding.
Yeah.
She's a Laborgi, huh? I like the name.
Thanks.
Yeah, it's very Italian sounding.
Laborgi. So what was the question?
So the question is, how much did they want to replace the seatbelt?
Well, they wanted about $250 for the parts and $150 for the labor.
Gee,
well, I mean, in order to do this, you know, you probably have to take out the entire back seat, okay, and probably some of the trim over the right shoulder of that rear seat passenger where the seat belt enters into the body. And then, you know, there's a lot of little doodads to take off, but it's basically nuts and bolts. you know.
And the question is it worth $150 to you? Because if you're going to buy a new one, it's going to be $250 no matter what.
And is it a car-specific thing?
No, it's absolutely a car-specific thing. I mean, you can't put anything else back there except the one that was made just for this car for this year.
Unless you decide to use rope.
Right. Well, but the larger question. So you have someone, by the way, who can assist you in doing this. I don't know if you're tool conversant.
I'm not tool conversant, but I'm about to marry somebody who is.
Ah, is the marriage any day now?
Not until next August.
But you could make this a condition, right?
Oh.
Right.
If you're
affianced, as they say.
Yeah, that's part of the prenup.
That he should have no problem coming over and screwing up your car, and this might give you some insight into the future.
Yeah, and his dad does work for an auto parts store, so maybe I can even get a better deal on the seatbelt.
Oh, maybe you can. The other question, of course, is how do you prevent the Lamborghini from chewing the next one?
That is the big question.
Because if it's going to cost you $400 every time he decides to chew on the belt.
We recommend Paragoric. Which I believe is a derivative of opium, which would knock the dog right out.
Yeah. Our mother used to use that on us all the time. As soon as you get a little spry, she'd give you a little shot of Paragoric and knock you out.
Yeah, you look like you're getting a cold. This is some Paragoric. Anyway, no, so you're going to have to put something on the thing that keeps him from biting through it.
Right.
And someone's going to have to sit in the back seat with him to constantly correct him until he stops chewing on this thing.
Because
okay.
He hates it. But there are lots of things. Bitter apple is one you can try. We found that our dogs loved it. never worked at all as far as keeping them off the furniture and all that. But there are lots of things you can try. But you want to try something that doesn't offend you, too.
Right.
But if you're unsure about how to do the seatbelt thing and your fiance isn't sure, then pay the dough and have it done.
Okay.
Right. And good luck with the Lamborghini.
Right. Okay. Thank you very
Michelle.
Much.
Bye.
Bye.
1-8. Wake up, Kevin. 888 Car Talk. That's 888-227-8255. Actually, I like the buzzer even for us. Dougie can let us know when a call is done. That's enough. Ring the bell. That's it. Move on. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hi, this is Lisa. I'm from Portland, Oregon.
That's it, Lisa. Time's
nice
up for you.
Nice talking to you, bye-bye.
Darn.
Too bad, Lisa.
Where are you from? Portland?
Portland.
Okay, yeah. What's going on?
Well, I have a 1999 Subaru Outback. It has about 83,000 miles on it. And when it rains, I have no trouble with the car. But after it stopped raining for about 2 weeks and I go to make a sharp turn, like I back into my driveway, I hear a not so nice of a noise coming from either one of the front wheels. It's sort of like a, but it's a little more high pitched.
But the wheels have to be moving for you to get this noise?
They have to be moving, and it usually happens when they're moving slowly and on a sharp turn. Like if I just go down the street and I turn left or I turn right, everything's fine.
And
if it rains, everything's fine.
And if it hasn't rained in the past couple of weeks, then you don't get this sound? Is that how you related the sound to the rain?
Yeah. You know, it's funny. I noticed, you know, I'm in Oregon. It rains all winter.
Yeah.
And then spring comes around and, you know, it starts to dry up. And then after it was dry for about 2 weeks, I started noticing the noise again. Now, you know, my fault. I noticed it for the first time last year about this time. But then it started raining and it went away.
No. Jesus.
Went away.
It went away all winter while it was raining.
I mean, so the rain makes it go away. So it can be there for weeks and weeks at a time.
Right.
And then it rains, and immediately after it rains.
It has to be a heavy rain. You know, we had a little spritzy rain.
It has to be enough to get the brakes wet, and is what I'm thinking. But it couldn't be, and this is, I hate to even ask the question, that when it's raining, the windows are up. And you don't hear the noise that you're hearing when it's not raining and the windows are open?
I don't drive with the windows open. It's not very...
That's unhealthy.
Yeah.
Yeah, I didn't think so. I didn't think you did.
Good question, though. Good question.
But I'm pretty sure what's happening is while it's raining, the wheels are getting lubricated by the water. So whatever is sticking, you know, and whether it's the accumulation of rust that's causing this noise... Or just something else, for example, a caliper that's sticking and forcing the brake pads against the disc rotor can cause noise that can be ameliorated by moisture. because the moisture gets in there and makes it slippery. It reduces the friction. It's like a lubricant.
Gotcha.
So when it's raining, you don't hear the noise, but then when the rain stops and everything dries out, that sticky caliper is now free to have that metal of the disc rotor rubbing against that brake pad with no water between them, and you're getting the noise. And it happens, believe it or not, worse on sharp turns because the disc rotor can get, believe it or not, deflected enough or bent enough to cause the noise.
Yeah. Have you ever had anyone take a look at the brakes?
That's only got 83,000.
Yeah, I have. And they said they were all right. But not since I had this noise.
Well, I mean, this sounds like the kind of noise that you could produce in the shop.
Yeah.
You're pretty sure it's coming from the front?
Yes.
Yeah.
Have you ever tried...
Is it coming from the driver's side or the other side?
Both.
Yeah, both.
Both sides.
You know, there's a small chance that it's not coming from either of the wheels, but in fact, it's coming from the power steering belt. Have you ever tried cranking the wheel all the way over, like you are when you're parking, for example, and getting the noise, but not moving the car?
Yes. It didn't make the noise.
Sorry, we have a bad connection now.
Ring the bell.
And my power steering fluid was low, but I got that replaced.
Yeah,
that
was
so
well,
it
I was just thinking the belt might have been making noise, and again, the water would act to lessen that. But if you are sure that you can turn the wheel all the way, and when the vehicle's not moving, there's no noise, then I'm sticking with it being the brakes. But and at 83,000, you may be ready for brakes.
Have you had this car since new?
No. Mm-mm.
Oh,
I've had it for about 3.5 years.
Well, now you know why the other person got rid of it.
I've only put about 13,000 miles on it.
Yeah, you can't take the noise, right?
But now I have a new job, and I have to drive to Oregon, Washington, Montana, and Idaho.
What is this job that requires you to drive so far?
Well, I work for the phone company. And I work.
Can't you
with...
call? I mean, if you're working with a phone, they can't give you a phone? What are you, climbing the poles?
Oh, I've got that too. No, I work for Quest, and I travel to our contracted properties in 4 states. So.
Oh, boy.
Oh, boy.
So well, I gotta.
You gotta get someone to really look at these brakes because you don't want any messes when you're driving in Montana.
Right.
Because we'll never hear from you again. See you, Lisa.
Thanks
for your call.
Worse yet, she'll never hear from us again.
Yeah, 888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hi, my name is Tom from Kansas City, Missouri.
Hi, Tom from Kansas City.
Hey, how are you?
Howdy. I have a 91 Jeep Cherokee. When I have my car in first gear, even with the clutch pedal depressed, my car still wants to drag forward.
Oh.
So I have to really jam down on the clutch pedal all the way to the floor
and
the brake. Otherwise, it continues to pull me forward.
Really?
And the only way to get it out of gear and to get it back into neutral is to let the clutch pedal out, let it jerk forward,
push
the clutch pedal back in, and then I can get it back into neutral.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, man.
I'm afraid you're going to tell me I need a new clutch.
I think you need a new clutch, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, if you're really lucky,
it's
the clutch master cylinder.
Okay.
This thing has a hydraulic clutch.
I mean, why did you jump right to he needs a new clutch?
Well, because what usually leaks on these is the slave cylinder. And if I'm not mistaken, the slave cylinder on this vehicle is part of the release bearing. So you have to take the transmission out.
Isn't that a clever design?
Yeah, brilliant.
Oh, man, that's really brilliant.
Well, Saab does the same thing, too.
Have you checked the fluid that's in the reservoir for the clutch?
No.
You didn't even know you had any.
I don't know how to. Yeah.
Well, if you look under the hood, you will find a little bottle that looks like the brake master cylinder reservoir.
Okay.
It's a little plastic thing. It's right on the firewall.
Okay.
And that little...
I'll bet you the thing's going to be empty of fluid.
Right. It might be empty, but you may not know why unless you look under the dashboard because the mechanism for that clutch master cylinder comes through the firewall and attaches, the rod attaches to your clutch pedal. And if that clutch master cylinder is leaking, then you may see evidence of fluid dripping out of it.
Or on your shoes.
You should be so lucky.
That's the thing to pray for.
Wait, it's a lot easier to replace the slave cylinder?
Oh,
man! No, the master cylinder is very easy to replace. The slave cylinder requires that you take out the entire transmission and transfer case.
Ooh.
Mm.
And move the Empire State Building over 3 inches.
On the other hand, if it's leaking very, very slowly and you're thinking of selling this vehicle, you could just install a 55-gallon drum on the roof with a little hose down to that reservoir and just keep filling the thing up.
Okay.
Yeah, you couldn't sell it like this. That would be dishonorable.
Right. No. He would tell people what's wrong.
Why you had the 55-gallon drum welded to the roof.
Say, so what is that 55-gallon drum up there? You say, what 55-gallon drum? No, but if you find that it's empty, try filling it up and see how long it takes for the symptom to recur. And that'll give you some clue as to how much it's leaking. And if you don't see anything inside the passenger compartment, it's the slave cylinder and you're done for.
Okay, great.
Yeah, and it's been nice knowing you.
Yeah. You guys wouldn't want a Jeep, would you?
No. Unless you put the drum on the roof. See you, Tom.
Thanks a lot.
Good luck.
Bye.
All right, look, it's time for us to take a short break.
Yes, it is.
And when we come back, we're going to have the answer to last week's puzzler, which was from my Learning Your Numbers series.
Oh, numbers series.
Yes.
So would you describe this puzzler as a real zero?
You mean like the guy sitting next to me? I hope not. Well, stay tuned and we'll have the whole story and the answer and then more of your car questions right after this short break.
Papa learned to drive just like Bonnie and Clyde in his modified 47 Ford. He set his wheels on fire, trying to push that needle higher. He kept his left foot mashed against the floor. The revenue man knew what was rolling down the ridge, but he couldn't catch my daddy's Ford no matter what he did. Black snake.
And even those sausage makers shudder at the thought of how our show gets made whenever they hear us say it. This is NPR. Hey, if you'd like to hear more car talk.
Yeah, like you're a parent and need a scared straight punishment for your kids.
You can download hundreds of classic car talk shows.
And by classic, we mean
old. Previously aired.
Exactly.
<you know.
laughs> Just go to cartalk.com and click where it says listen to the show. Hi, we're back. You're listening to Car Talk with us, Click and Clack, the Tappert Brothers, and we're here to talk about cars, car repair, and the answer to last week's puzzler.
Yeah, numbers. Learning your numbers.
That's right. And the inspiration for this puzzler came from a fellow named Jim Francis, and here it is.
Yeah.
When my kids were in school, they had to learn their numbers. So each day for homework, they would bring home a list of numbers on a piece of paper, and they were asked to spell out each number. You know, so the number 7 would be there, and there'd be a blank space. The kids would have to write SEVEN next to it. You got it, right?
Yeah, sure. Yeah, I can do that.
You're up to 7, huh? Oh, they were also asked to go the other way. They'd see SIXTY, and they'd have to write 6060, right? Et cetera, et cetera. Well, one day, son number 2 presented me with a list of numbers between 1 and 100, which I'm going to read you in a minute. And he said, these numbers are different. There's something special about them. Andy said, these are the only numbers between 1 and 100 inclusive that meet this criteria.
I'm ready. Go ahead.
Here's the list. You ready, sure?
I'm ready.
Well, it's long, you know, so settle in for a bit, will you?
I'm settled.
4, 6, 12, 30, 33, 36, 40, 45, 50, 54. You ain't getting tired yet, cramping up, are you? 56, 60, 70, 81, 88, 90, and 100.
All right, I give up.
You know, I've always admired your persistence. Well, here's what's...
No, I could see right away that I had no idea what you were talking about.
Well, here's what's unusual about these numbers. Each one of them, you ready, is evenly divisible by the number of letters in its English spelling. For example, 33, the number 33 has 11 letters in it. And as such, 11 goes into 33 3 times. 6 has 3 letters and is divisible by those 3 letters, evenly divisible. 50 has 5 letters, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Got it?
Yeah.
You with me? Do we have a winner?
Yes, we do. Our winner this week is Ron Burgett from Mountain View, Arkansas. and for having his answer selected at random from all the correct answers that we got, Ron's going to get a $26 gift certificate to the Shameless Commerce Division, with which he can order our Car Talk High Octane Drip Kit.
Don't worry, folks. My brother's not breathing more gas fumes than usual. This is a coffee lover's kit with a Car Talk plastic travel mug and a half pound of gourmet coffee in your choice of leaded or unleaded.
Get the leaded.
Anyway, congratulations, Ron, on being this week's puzzler winner. We'll have a brand new puzzle coming up later in the show. And in the meantime, we'll take more of your car questions. We're at 888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hello, gentlemen. This is Mark from Richmond, Virginia calling.
Hi, Mark.
Thanks for calling us, gentlemen.
I recently purchased a GMC Envoy. Nice vehicle. However, as you probably know, the gas mileage is horrendous.
What is the gas mileage?
19.
Yeah, I'm getting, you ready for this? 12 to 13 around town and about 15 or 16 on the highway.
Yeah. You should have bought an excursion.
Well, that's what I was going to ask you guys, and that's one of the – I've got a two-part question, is that I was looking into some of these aftermarket products, and I think they're a scam.
They are.
You mean the pellets?
there's the Vornado.
The crap-a-chip.
The crap-a-chip, right.
Yeah, but you're going to try them all, Mark. I mean, they're all, what are they, $29.95 a piece? I think the Vornado I would try first.
Okay.
And, gee, isn't it a disappointment? What is he getting, 16 miles to the gallon?
That's it.
That's the best.
Jeez.
Yeah,
well, what do you expect? I mean, why did you buy this in the first place?
Well, ironically, I bought a boat, and I needed something to tow the boat with.
How big is the boat?
The boat is 23 foot. It's weighing 6,000 pounds.
You're just making it.
I'm just...
Don't bring your mother-in-law along. You won't be able to... No.
Amen, brother.
You're in trouble. Why don't you learn to keep your mouth shut?
So you want to know if the additives work, and the answer is no, they don't.
They don't.
No, I mean,
for the most part, I mean, we've seen these things come and go for years and years, and we've seen everything from the pellets to the springs you put in the gas tank.
Don't forget the magnets.
The magnets.
Right.
The magnets are supposed to reorient the gasoline molecules.
The radioactive thallium. I mean, we've seen it all, man. And all of these things, either you strap on the fuel line, you sling underneath the thing, you put on the roof, you put the antennas on, you add to the gas tank. You put this stuff, no matter what you do.
But, you know, when they do the infomercials,
yeah,
the rationale for why it should work is always impeccable.
It is.
I mean, I know the Vornado thing.
Yeah.
They say things like, it works for jet engines, why shouldn't it work for your gasoline engine?
Well, maybe because it's a completely different engine.
Right.
Well, you know, you're getting 16 miles to the gallon, but that's with the boat on it, right?
No, that's without the boat.
Oh, really?
Oh, you're in trouble. Well,
I hear this sucking sound when I've got the boat on the rear.
Yeah, well, no, you'd expect the mileage to go down considerably with the boat on. You may be driving it too hard or too fast.
Okay.
You know, and it may be that a lot of these things count on when you buy one of these devices, whether it's the Vornado or the pellets or whatever, what they're counting on you to do so they can eventually get from you an unsolicited testimonial is to alter the way you drive because you want to get better mileage. So, and they'll give you a little pamphlet
and
that
says... And you want to believe that the thing works.
Right, because you don't want to believe that you're that stupid that you bought this thing.
You spent $29.95 for magnets. Magnets?
Right.
Come on.
We don't need no stinking magnets. So you buy this thing, and then you put it on. And, of course, it doesn't work. But if you adjust your driving habits a little bit, you stop idling the thing for long periods of time, you stop lead-footing it, you know, you stop with the jackrabbit starts, you begin to drive instead of at 80, at 65... Next thing you know, you're getting 19 miles to the gallon, not because of the Vornado,
right,
but because you're driving it more sensibly.
Okay.
So you need to do that first. I think that's going to do more for you than all the things. But in the interest of science, I think you should buy one of each one of those things and let us know what works.
I mean, if you installed them all, they'd be taking gas out of your tank.
Good. You're getting a gas credit back.
Good luck, man. You're going to need it.
Thanks, guys.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Hey, you know what time it is now?
Time to plant the spring bulbs in the back of your MG?
No. Time to play Stump the Chumps. This is the part of the show when we check back on a caller from a previous show and see if he or she is still mad at us.
So who's our lucky player this week?
It's Becca from Pennsylvania. Remember Becca? Neither do I.
I don't even remember Pennsylvania.
Well, we'll remember her soon enough. Becca called us a few months back because she was having a little trouble with her Nissan Maxima.
Whenever it shifts, at the shift point, which is about 2,000 RPM, it will start to jerk and cough. It'll, like, it's choking. It'll go...
How about... see, I have an answer already. But if I ask this question, I may lose my answer.
Okay.
Well,
so I do this with great trepidation.
I think in the interest of science, you've got to ask the question.
You a student?
I am not a student, but I work at a college in town.
Oh, how did you know that?
The reason I ask that is I suspect that Becca hasn't had this thing tuned up in a long time.
That is not true.
Whoops.
Whoops.
Was that your question?
Well, okay.
I'm sorry you asked that.
I stand corrected.
See, you had to ask.
You made me do it, man.
So, I mean, what did we tell Becca was wrong with her Maxima? I don't remember.
I think we both zeroed in on the fuel system. I thought it was a plugged fuel filter, and you thought it was the fuel injectors. And they both sound kind of bogus, don't they?
No, they do, yeah. All right, Becca, are you there?
I am here.
But before we find out whether the problem was fuel delivery or answer delivery, we need you to confirm that we have not spoken since your last appearance on Car Talk. Is that true?
That is absolutely true.
And also that the answer you're about to give here on Stump the Chumps has not been influenced by our staff, the staff of National Public Radio, or that all-expense-paid weekend in Pittsburgh that we sent you. Is that true?
Did you pay my turnpike bill?
And yeah. The tolls. Yeah.
No, not at all.
Okay. All right, so we're big boys.
We can take it.
And we can take the disappointment.
You're going to have to.
Oh, jeez. So it wasn't the fuel filter, obviously.
No, nothing so simple.
Nothing so simple. Well, we were trying to save you a few bucks, you realize.
Oh, I wish you could have.
We didn't want to suggest anything. It was a distributor, huh?
No.
Oh, worse?
Worse.
What?
$600 worse.
$600?
It was. The mass airflow meter.
Mass meter. Oh, you poor thing. You know, those never go bad. They don't. Not in Nissans. I don't think I've ever replaced one of those in a Maxima.
Oh, well.
But it runs like a dream now, doesn't it?
Yes, actually it does, except for the other things that are going wrong with
yeah,
it.
Yeah, well, we don't want to know. We didn't help you the last time. It's unlikely we'd help you this time.
Oh, that's okay. Yeah, I like it much better.
Well, anyway, thanks for playing Stump the Chumps, Becca.
Sure. Thanks for having me back.
All right.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
If you hear someone you'd like us to bring back for Stump the Chumps, email us your suggestions from cartalk.com.
Or you can call, and you can probably stump us right now because, you know, we're not doing well today.
We're stumpable.
The number is 888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-22-78-255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
It's Mike Nelson. I'm calling from Ann Arbor, Michigan.
Hi,
Mike. How you doing, Mike?
Good.
What's up, Mike?
Well, it's kind of a weird thing. A couple weeks ago, I went to Seattle with my children, my 9-year-old daughter and 6-year-old son, and we were out at the airport renting a car. And when we got out of the car, my daughter was getting some clothes out of the trunk. We were going to change our clothes. And she kind of hung her blouse down there right by the exhaust pipe right at the time I started the car. And she came running up and said, "Daddy, the car sucked up my shirt."
Hmm.
Yeah. I thought it was weird. She asked me why, and I...
I mean, did the shirt, like, disappear?
It went inside, yeah. She showed me, it, you know, I walked out and looked, and she said, yeah, it went in there. And
really?
So,
really?
I revved the engine thinking it might blow it out, but it didn't come out.
Doesn't anyone screen these calls?
No, it's true. I swear it's true.
No, I believe you, Mike. You're not the kind of guy who would lie.
You had started it up, and it sucked the shirt up, and the car continued to run?
Yes.
So it didn't suck it up when you turned the key off, because that could happen.
The shirt was down near the, if we get this right, the shirt was somewhere down near the exhaust pipe. And you happened to start up the engine, and as you started it, according to your daughter, who's 9 years old, and probably has a lot more brains than either one of us, the shirt disappeared by getting sucked into What does exhaust mean? It means out from.
That's
ex,
what I thought.
Latin, out from.
Yeah, yeah. Well,
away from.
Yeah,
not
gonna,
into.
Yeah, but we're going to have to think of something good here.
Well, here's what I thought.
Well, see, here's the curious thing. When you first said it, I could see it happening.
I can too.
I can see it happening, and yet it doesn't make any sense.
Well, there is a...
Wait a minute. Now, hold it. When the engine is cranking,
there is a significant amount of what's called valve overlap.
Yes,
so that there are pistons moving downward on the intake stroke while the exhaust valve is still open.
Yes, indeed. That's
okay.
Right. So there is vacuum.
So when the exhaust stroke has finished, the piston, close your eyes, Mike. Imagine this. Imagine a cylinder in which the piston has descended, okay?
I'm with you on this.
On the power stroke, and now it is coming up, and it is pushing the exhaust gas out of the open exhaust valve, okay?
Yeah.
Okay.
And the exhaust gas is wafting out the tailpipe. However, in order to be ready for the new charge to come in, the intake valve has to open before that piston has reached what's called top dead center.
Sure.
So while the exhaust valve is still open, the intake valve opens up, okay? And now the piston is moving down, and the exhaust valve is still open a little bit, and it's closing. My brother's got that look in his face. It's closing because you need time to get all that stuff, and it's possible to have a little negative pressure in the exhaust system. Don't start laughing. You're ruining the whole mood. You can't be laughing. Oh, that's a credibility destroyer, man. You can't go laughing during a science. You think they laughed at Einstein?
It sounded good for a while.
Where did I go wrong?
Well,
what happened?
I can tell you.
You can tell me?
Yeah, you said a little.
The word was a little.
That was it. I mean, I was trying to visualize an entire shirt.
Well, I can't do the whole shirt. It must have been, still a little kid, 9 years old. It was a little shirt.
It was a little blouse, yeah.
Well, I mean, the thing is, we have to believe what happened. And we can't say that this is crazy and that therefore it didn't happen because we have an eyewitness, this 9-year-old girl.
And I looked all over. I mean, and she said, no, it went right in there. And
yeah.
Said,
and if we know that it happened, then there has to be an answer for why it happened.
And
my brother's is
answer.
As good as any.
As good as you're going to get.
We're going to get.
That must be what happened.
Well, I am going to leave the studio here, and I am going to go right outside and try this. Anyone got a shirt?
No, we'll use 20s.
Hey, Mike, thank you for helping in the science, furthering knowledge on the planet.
All right. Hey, thanks a lot. I really appreciate the answer.
By the way, if anyone that uses our website, visits our website, if anyone has a better theory, and I'm sure there'll be about 10,000 better ones, people should email us.
Yeah, and just tell us everything.
Tell us everything that we don't know.
And I want answers from physics professors. No, forget. No answers.
Automotive
from
engineers.
Yeah, real guys.
Yeah, we want the real guys.
Yeah.
Or muffler experts, guys from work at Midas.
And don't forget, this guy, Mike, is from Ann Arbor, which is only a stone's throw from the world's automotive center.
Right, I'm sure the people will be coming to your door to give you the answer.
Cleveland.
See you, Mike.
Hey, thanks a lot.
Sucked up the shirt?
Okay, we're going to try it as soon as we leave.
We are.
You get changed for 20? Look, I think it's time for us to take a little break so that our local stations can identify themselves.
Wait, why do they need to identify themselves? I mean, the only people they're talking to are people who have already found them.
Yeah, well.
The people they need to identify themselves to are the people who haven't found them yet.
Yeah.
Wait, I got it. They should be identifying themselves on another station. Then we can skip the break.
You're a bleating genius, you know that? We'll be back with more of my brother's insights, more of your calls, a brand new puzzler, and this is from the Celsius Fahrenheit series.
Oh, yeah.
And that'll be coming up in just a minute, so please stay tuned.
My foot is on the pedal, and my foot is on the brake. Every morning just the same, my takeoff doesn't take. Not moving down the highway underneath the overpass. I thought that I'd be first in line, instead I'm sitting last. Oh, hello, hello, hello. I'm always on this freeway, and this freeway tells me no. My left lane is a parking lot, my right lane doesn't go. I said, hello, hello, hello.
And even though Scott Simon hopes there are antidepressants in the D.C. tap water whenever he hears us say it, this is NPR. We're back.
Don't wake me up like that. Where's the bell?
Hey, we haven't woken up. What's his name?
Kevin.
Kevin. Kevin missed three calls and stumped the chumps. Hi, we're back. You're listening to Car Talk with us, Click and Clack, the Tappet Brothers. And we're here to discuss cars, car repair, and the new Puzzler. And as
from
I,
the Fahrenheit Celsius.
Series.
Series.
Yes. And I didn't really even have to obfuscate this at all.
No kidding.
I'm kind of disappointed in myself. I only added like one or two words
well,
here or there.
Know, some people are getting the hang of it.
Yeah. We need more of them to email us. Anyway, this came in from a fellow named Mike Mercer.
Oh.
And I'm just going to read it because he
good
did such
job,
a
good job, Mike. We'll send you $100.
A master of $100 with a hot dog. Charlie is heading off to work one fall morning, and as he does every morning, he passes a billboard that displays the current temperature in Fahrenheit in one corner and the temperature in Celsius in the other corner. You know, left lower corner Fahrenheit, right lower corner Celsius, for example.
Sure.
You got it? He notices both temperatures, and he thinks it's a pretty nice day for late fall. But as the day progresses, a monstrous cold front hits town, and on his way home, Charlie passes the temperature billboard again to find that the Fahrenheit temperature is now 36 degrees colder than it was that morning. So when he drove into work, it was one temperature, and now it's that temperature, minus 36. But when he looks at the Celsius temperature, he's confused because it reads exactly the same as it did that morning.
Mm.
Charlie figures that the thing must be stuck or something because it's certainly much colder on his ride home. But in fact, it was not stuck.
Yeah.
But there was indeed something wrong with the Celsius sign. What was the problem with it? And how cold was it?
Now,
if you think you know the answer.
Wow, that is a beauty. That is absolute. Who is this guy?
I forgot. Mike Mercer.
Mike Mercer, that is a wonderful puzzle.
I knew you'd like it. If you think you know the answer, write it on the back of a $26 bill and send it to Puzzler Tower, Car Talk Plaza, Box 3500, Harvard Square, Cambridge.
Our fair city.
Matt 02238. Or you can email us your answer from cartalk.com. Or you give us a call right now if you have nothing better to do. The number is 888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hi, this is Ed from Bloomfield, New Jersey.
Hi, Ed.
Ed.
I'm also from Brookline, Massachusetts. Spent
really?
About 10 years up there back in the mid-70s.
Yeah. Oh, so now you're in New Jersey in the witness protection program.
Yeah, sort of. Well, everyone in New Jersey is in the witness protection program.
We noticed.
Especially in Bloomfield. We're right in the heartland.
Yeah, so what's wrong with your car, Ed?
Well, anyway, well, I want to tell you, first of all, that when I was in Brookline, I was there going to Northeastern University. I did also attend your Car Talk preventive maintenance, basic car maintenance program.
Yeah.
I don't know if you give them anymore.
No.
Were you the guy that sat in front and kept asking all the questions, a really annoying guy?
Yeah, that's me.
Yeah, I remember.
That's me, but yeah, you gave it through this like New Age spiritual consciousness.
Oh, yeah, I remember we had the candles and the incense and all that. Yeah,
yeah. It was amazing.
Yeah, the healing crystals.
The way you guys can insinuate yourself into these situations.
Yeah. Did we sell you a healing crystal for your car?
Yeah, it broke. I dropped on a corner.
Well, that might have been when we were into the pyramids.
Anyhow, I do have a mysterious problem, though.
Yeah.
A New Jersey problem. Actually, it's my son's problem.
A New Jersey
he
problem.
He recently bought, a couple of weeks ago, a Taurus. This is his first car buying on his own.
Yeah.
And it's 34,000 miles on it. And we're having a problem with it not starting. In other words, you turn the key and nothing at all happens. Just silence, like a dead battery.
Uh-huh.
But the thing is, this only happens after the car has been run for a certain amount of time and then stopped briefly, like to get gas or to get a speeding ticket, something like that. Which is a freak occurrence. Well, this is why we bought the Taurus. It's a gray four-door Taurus. We figured it's as close to invisible as we could get.
And he's still got a speeding ticket.
Yeah, he still got the ticket. But anyhow.
And then had to endure the embarrassment afterwards when the cop says, okay, you can go now. No,
no,
I can't.
I can't.
And the car don't start.
Yeah.
And And this is how it's happened like that. And it happens randomly, not every time, but kind of intermittently that way. And the way we restart the thing is you pull off the positive battery cable and put it back on. Then the car will start fine and it'll go.
Really?
And if you do nothing, if you do nothing, will it not start for an hour?
It just sits there. Well, we've never sat on the side of the road for an hour.
What's the longest you've ever sat by the side of the road?
Oh, only 15, 20 minutes maybe.
15, 20 minutes, at which time you took off the battery cable, put it back on, and it started.
Yeah, we fiddled around in there thinking, well, we started out by sort of, you know, just twisting it, thinking maybe the cable was bad.
Yeah, well, that was good thinking.
Well, I mean, I would certainly suspect the connection between the battery cable and the battery.
And pulling it on. See, the way I think, which is probably too complicated, I'm thinking of a microprocessor being, you know, rebooted and cleared out.
Yeah, no,
Yeah, this is basic stuff.
This is okay. one of the remaining, the only remaining pieces of the car that is truly old technology.
And that my brother still understands.
And I still understand.
Well,
right.
See, I thought I understand because I took your course.
Yeah, that's right.
Well, basically, you have the ignition switch, which is the thing where you stick the key, okay?
Okay.
And you have the starter motor and the battery
and
a solenoid. And in this case, because it's an automatic transmission, you have what's called a neutral safety switch.
Mm-hmm.
So when you turn the key, you're trying to send current from the battery to the solenoid, which turns the starter, which makes the thing start, but it has to go through the neutral safety switch first to make sure that you're in either park or neutral.
Yeah.
So the problem could be the switch, it could be the starter, it could be the neutral safety switch, it could be the battery or one of the connections.
Okay.
And I think it's the connection in your case.
Okay. Just the cable itself?
I think you have a crummy connection because when you take it off and put it back on, it starts right up, right?
Yeah, it will.
You know, okay. I would clean those connections and... If that doesn't solve the problem, if cleaning the terminal ends doesn't solve the problem, then the next time it doesn't start, tow it someplace, and they can immediately figure out what it is because they'll see if there's current getting to the solenoid.
How old does this battery look?
It doesn't look bad. It looks clean. You know, it doesn't have a lot of crud or anything on the terminals, but it may be original with the car.
Well, I don't know. I'm going to guess that it's not the connection.
Mm-hmm.
From my vast knowledge of batteries, I'm going to say that you need a battery. That's how I feel about this. Sometimes I just have these, you know, the healing of hands. Remember that chapter when
we did the laying on of hands?
Yeah, remember that?
I remember that. That was my favorite
part. It's also...
Yeah, remember that part of the class where we all put on the blindfolds and we went through everyone's pockets?
I remember levitating that horizon. I thought that was cool.
Yeah, that was quite an exciting moment for me.
And then we fell, you know?
Well, I'm going to guess that when you take this to the garage to have it looked at, they're going to figure out that you need a battery.
No, don't listen to him.
I think you have a dying...
He's a moron.
You have a dying cell in that battery.
And that would explain how that cell gets rejuvenated in the 6 seconds it takes you to remove the terminal end and put it back on. That cell springs back into life.
Okay.
That's right.
There you go. Okay, that's why. Never mind. That's why we retired him early. We offered him early retirement.
It has to do
get out and stay out
with the laying on of hands. He's inadvertently laying his hands on that battery.
Well, he is,
and that's what's making it come back to life.
Still carrying some of that magnetism that I got in the course.
Yeah. Hey, look, my brother's analysis was a complete guess. I'm allowed the same liberty, and it's the battery, not the connection. I'm going for that. Call us back, Ed, and let us know.
That also makes sense to me.
Yeah,
I know it did. Everything made sense to you when you took the course.
Most of your suggestions are pretty cheap to fix anyway.
Yeah.
So we can just do it all.
Thanks for calling.
Okay.
All right.
Okay.
See you. Bye-bye.
Okay, fine. Bye.
1-888-CAR-TALK. That's 1-888-227-8255. A lawyer on Car Talk.
Hi, this is Tamara from Vancouver, Washington.
Tamara.
Hi, Tamara.
I have this dilemma. We have a 1984 Volkswagen Vanagon that my family and I both, we all just love it. We take it on cross-country camping trips all the time. It's a good adventure van. But I'm just getting to this point in my life where I'd like something with some mod cons, you know, just a little more convenient, not such a big thing to drag around with me.
The Vanagon, although it was a fun vehicle.
It's really
you have
fun.
To say, it really does not have the modern...
Amenities.
Amenities. It just...
Yeah. In fact...
It's a little bit rustic.
It's downright barbaric.
Barbaric. That's the word I was looking for. Barbaric.
Yeah, something like a horn would be nice, you know, in traffic. Or...
A horn is good, yeah.
Well, I will say that I don't know how old you are. And you don't have to divulge that unless you want to.
She's
but...
got kids. She's old enough to have kids.
I've got teenagers.
But I'm
teenagers.
Guessing you're in your early 40s.
Okay.
She'll take that.
She'll take that. She didn't act indignant.
All right. Okay. Guess how old I am tomorrow.
I think you're probably in your early 40s as well.
I'll take that.
Well, anyway.
So what's preventing you from having a few more amenities?
Well, my family all loves this car so much.
Give it to them.
Oh,
it's not worth a dime.
Except it's not very safe.
It's not safe.
No, it's not.
You know, so I'm thinking some airbags.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Something in front. So
yeah.
If we got in a head in with an SUV, yeah. We wouldn't lose our legs.
Yeah. No, I agree. So what,
you are picky, picky. All right. What vehicle have you sort of got your eye on?
Well, I'm really actually drooling over a Forester, but... No one else wants one. Yeah, it seems like it would fit camping gear, a dog, a couple kids.
Well, you can't, not barely. I mean, how big are the kids? They're teenagers, right?
They are.
Did you say you were 50?
College.
40. She's 40. Early 40s. What a wife.
Just like
guy.
You.
Just like me, exactly.
Well,
I can't even remember the early 40s.
Yeah, and he's talking about the 1940s, not his 40s. But anyway, I think the Forester might be a little smaller, though. I do love it.
How old are these kids?
My son is 17, and my daughter's 19.
Oh, well, they don't go with you anywhere.
Well, probably not my daughter too much anymore, but my son will for a couple more years.
Why?
Because we really like him.
But does he like you?
Like you? It's not a
question. Yeah, we liked all of our kids, but they couldn't wait to get away from us.
Yeah, I love my kids.
Well, in which case, I'm going to go back to the Forester, because I think your daughter is, she's gone.
I think so.
Yeah.
Yeah. And your son, no, he won't be around long either.
Oh, no. This is heartbreaking.
He's going to get his own car.
You know, let me just tell you something. I have a son who's older than your son.
Uh-huh.
My son is graduated from college and living at home again.
Does he like to travel with you?
Yeah, are you kidding me? They've been buying him plane tickets. He won't leave the house. No, they sent him out for a loaf of bread, and they changed the locks of the doors. He climbed in through a window.
and despite the fact that he lives with us, I haven't seen him for 3 days. I mean, when I leave... in the morning to go to get ready for this.
Whoa, 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 whoa. What do you mean morning?
He's still in bed, though.
Well, let me just say that by the time I leave the building, he's still asleep.
Of course.
And when I come back into the building, he's been up for a brief moment and left.
Right.
And so he's now out for the night. And I go to sleep at midnight or thereabouts.
The day is just starting.
He's not even, he's not home.
Well, you know, this is a great example of timesharing.
I haven't seen him for 3 days.
In fact, based on this scheme, you could have four or five more kids you wouldn't even see. So, Tamara, I wouldn't worry about your daughter is, geez, history. You won't see her for five more years. And your son is soon going to disappear. You should get the Forester. You'll love it.
How is it for reliability and repairs? I mean,
it's
is
great.
It something my husband could tinker with and do, or is it really...
No, tell him it's beyond him. You don't want him messing around with it.
Oh, really? Okay. Because he likes to do that.
There's hardly a car around that you can do anything to, except for like an 84 Vanagon. You want one
of them?
That's
why we still have an 84 Vanagon.
Yeah, no, it is a huge blow to the male ego.
It is. It's horrible.
To open the hood and not be able to... First of all, you can't recognize anything.
Right.
You can't even see
anything. And even if you can recognize a few things, there's nothing you feel that you can fix anymore.
It's a sad change.
It is a sad change, and yeah. I think we need to do something about that. I really think it's affected the fabric of our lives. That the husband used to be outside in the, you know, front of the house tinkering with the car.
Exactly.
Till the wee hours,
and then, you know.
My uncle, I remember, used to rebuild his fuel pump every Saturday.
And then when he got a car that had an electric fuel pump, he used to open the hood and take his wrench set out and just tighten stuff. And we said, what are you tightening? I don't know. But things get loose.
With tears running down his face.
Yeah, yeah. No, because he was reduced to uselessness. So you might want to keep the van going around just so that your husband will tinker with something.
Yeah.
But don't let him touch the forest.
I mean, there's no sense selling it. I mean, who's going to buy it, first of all? And it's not worth a dime.
Oh, but they're really popular out here in the West.
Keep it for nostalgic purposes. You can drive it around town and paint some flowers on it, put some peace signs on it, and it'll be cool.
Okay, great advice.
See you tomorrow.
Thank you.
Thanks for your
call.
Bye-bye.
Thanks, Paul. Bye.
Bye-bye. Well, it's happened again. You've wasted another perfectly good hour listening to Car Talk, and you have indeed wasted. Wake up, Kevin! Our esteemed producer is Doug the Subway Fugitive, not a slave to fashion, Bongo Boy Berman. Our associate producers are David the Cavs of Belleville Green, Carly High Voltage Nix, and Catherine Frau Blucher Fenelosa. Our web lackey is Doug the Old Gray Mare. Our engineer is John Cartman Parati. Our interns are Ariel Niedermeyer and Michaela Ross. And our technical, spiritual, and menu advisor, just back from the Santorini, stuffed zucchini, clam linguine, fettuccine, cheese panini, cocktail weenie, dry martini, luncheoncini, is John Bugsy Lawler. A little poetic license there. Our public opinion pollster is Paul Murky of Murky Research, assisted by statistician Margin of Error. Our customer care representative is Haywood Jabuzoff. Our personal makeup artist is Bud Tugley. Our personal hygiene advisor from the Tokyo office is Otekashawa. Our staff bicycle tester is Maya Sertz. Our loss prevention associate is Natasha DeMerchandise. Our staff urologist is Pete Shadil. Our repo agent is Carmine Now. Our cruise activity planner is Eaton Doolittle. Our practical joke evaluator is Odessa Goodwin. Our Russian chauffeur is Peekoff and Dropoff. Guest accommodations are provided by the Horseshoe Road Inn. And the head of our working mother support group is Erasmus B. Dragon. Our chief counsel from the law firm of Dewey, Cheatham & Howe is Hugh Lewis Dewey, known to the pigeons looking for someone else's Wi-Fi signal in Harvard Square as Huey Louie Dewey. Thanks so much for listening. We're Click and Clack, the Tappet Brothers. And remember, don't drive like my brother.
And remember, don't drive like my brother.
That's what I said. We'll be back next week. Bye-bye. You can get a podcast of this show, which is number 1139, download classic Car Talk episodes, or check out our clothing and CD collections all over at cartalk.com.
Also this week at cartalk.com, how to adjust your mirrors.
Now, I know what you're thinking. You're thinking, I know how to adjust the mirrors in my car. I've been doing it for years, just like my brother thinks he knows how to find both cheeks in the shower.
I do.
But you know how to use all three mirrors, the two side views and the rear view, to completely eliminate any blind spots.
Whoa.
That means no, I guess, huh?
Yeah.
Well, check out our description completely with arrows and diagrams. It's a pretty neat trick, and you can see it right now over at cartalk.com. Car Talk is a production of Dewey, Cheatham & Howe and WBUR in Boston.
And even though Carl Castle wonders if that job-selling aluminum siding is still available, whenever he hears us say it, this is NPR.